On the first night of the conference, Dr. Ernest Sternglass spoke. He is Emeritus Professor of Radiological Physics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Dr. Sternglass helped conduct the first baby tooth survey in the 1960s that found high levels of strontium-90 in children's teeth. This discovery, which could only be related to nuclear weapons testing, forced President John Kennedy to sign the Partial Weapons Test Ban Treaty and ended above-ground nuclear testing. Through the 1990s, Dr. Sternglass has been involved in the so-called Tooth Fairy Project, another baby tooth survey that has again found a rise in strontium-90 in baby teeth from children living around nuclear power plants. Dr. Sternglass.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here and to be able to participate in helping more people to do what I've and my group and my friends have been able to do for the last 20, 30, and I'm afraid as long as 40 years, because the first time I became involved in this subject was in 1962, when I happened to be finding out about what Alice Stewart had found, namely that a few x-rays during pregnancy greatly increased the risk of a child being born with some form of serious defect like leukemia or cancer or some other problem. And that caused me to look at what in the world was going on in terms of more radiation being produced when the Russian government, the Soviet government, detonated a 50 million megaton bomb over Siberia in the fall of 1961, at the very same time when everyone was being told that they must build bomb shelters and duck under the chairs and under the desks. So we were building a new house, and we had new babies, a new son and a new daughter on the way, and that made me realize that I couldn't protect our children with bomb shelters, and that made me write a paper based on Dr. Alice Stewart's work that a single bomb, 50 megaton bomb, produced the equivalent of an abdominal x-ray of a quarter of a rad, or 250 millirads or so, for every person in the Northern Hemisphere. And so I predicted, on the basis of Dr. Stewart's study, there would be have to be an increase in childhood leukemia around the world. And that did, in fact, happen. And when it so happened that a Dr. Ralph Lapp was a science advisor to the president, and he had written a book together with a man at the University of Pittsburgh whom I knew, and so I went to see him in the fall of 62, just at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we were on the verge of starting a nuclear war. And I showed him what I wanted to write up, and he helped me to draft a paper that was published in Science in June of 1963. Thank God for his help and that of Dr. Barry Commoner and other people. We literally had to force the editor, who was Philip Abelson, who was the editor of Science. He didn't want to publish it at first. He rejected the paper. And then, fortunately, heavy pressure was exerted by him from by the White House and people in the community of radiologists. And so it was finally published in June of 63. And that began my whole real effort since then to warn the world about the danger of nuclear power and initially nuclear fallout, because as a young scientist engineer at the Westinghouse Research Lab, well, we had just, built this wonderful, clean, small nuclear plant, shipping port, the first one in the nation. And my boss at the Westinghouse Research Lab had designed the core, and we knew it was being used in submarines, the same type, and we wouldn't see all the sailors die, so we all assumed that nothing came out. And that is what I'm going to tell you about now, how we found out that indeed very small amounts of radiation that are constantly released, even under normal conditions, have had enormous impacts far beyond anything that I or anyone at the time could have anticipated, because we made one very bad mistake that we did not realize. We believed that we could establish, and people had done, established radiation standards on the basis of 100 years worth of X-ray experience. But X-rays are external and turned out to be totally different from what you ingest or inhale, as was just described by our previous speakers. And that made all the difference, and we didn't know it at the time. None of us had any understanding of this. And so what I'm going to try to do is to give you historically an idea as to how we began to understand how much more serious fallout, distant fallout, that was regarded as negligible, had enormous health effects on our society. And I'm afraid to say at this time, and you won't believe this until you see all the material I'm going to show you over the next few days, that it is literally threatening the very health and economic future of this nation. These so-called tiny permitted releases are killing our children and changing their ability to function in a normal society. Okay? So that's what I'm going to try to do. Now, to begin with, you have to understand that I was not an epidemiologist. I was trained and got a degree in bachelor's in electrical engineering. Can't be any more removed from epidemiology. And I have to admit, I never took a course in biology. I mean, you know, nothing in statistics. And yet, we were able to put together the kind of material that any one of you can do, and can do it much faster than we did, because we now have the internet and we have fantastic websites with fantastic material. And that's among the things I'm going to urge you to do, is remember that we have this fantastic new home medium, and you can get into it by going to simply punch in radiation.org, and you'll come to our website. And that will lead you to all the things that I'm going to be talking about, and to many, many more sources than have ever been possible before. And I'll also give you, each one of you will get a small pamphlet that will describe how to use the internet to get information on reactors, to go where you can get data from state authorities, where you can go to federal government sources for every type of disease, by county, by state, and all these things we have in this country. And that is the wonderful thing that we do have, a fantastic system of statistical data that no other nation has. And that gives us the chance to learn and to teach the rest of the world how very much more serious low levels from nuclear fission, not from X-rays, are so serious, okay? That doesn't mean that today X-rays are not being overused in some cases. Like in CT scans of children, enormous amounts of radiation are being given to people. I don't want you to neglect that. But what we're finding is that still, at this time, the dominant effect on the newborn, on which the future of the nation depends, is really due to the so-called tiny, negligible amounts of fission products permitted to be released by nuclear reactors. So let me start with, how did we really begin to find out that small amounts of radiation are so much more serious? And the answer is only because we had people in Japan who gathered data on their statistics that were unprecedented in detail. Dr. Segi at the Japanese Cancer Society produced fantastic documentation as to what happened all over Japan after the first atomic bomb was detonated in Hiroshima and the first in Nagasaki together, and then all the tests by the Russians and us in the Pacific and what it did to Japanese health. And I'll give you just some examples, but you'll find all the details and all the articles that I've ever written about this subject also are listed on the website if you look hard enough. And therefore, this is just a sample of all the many things that exist. But I want you to see for your own eyes what the nature of this evidence is. So let me show you what this is. This is a cancer mortality rate for children. 5 to 9 year old male children in all of Japan, not just Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And this is from 1935 all the way to 1970. Now, the amazing thing is that during that time, there was a six-fold increase in cancer rates. And it happened only after the bomb began. Now, no one can say that, oh, there's some other cause. The mother started to smoke, right? That's why the children were dying, right? Or they were taking birth control pills, right? Can you believe that? Well, not when you get through with all the data I'm going to show you, okay? And this means that every test series produced another bump. And when the bomb testing stopped, it began to go down again, okay? But the mothers kept smoking, and they were taking birth pills and all that, okay? And there were power plants operating long before nuclear plants operated in Japan, right? And yes, here, during the time of all this terrible coal and all this awful stuff coming out of the stack, the babies were not dying at this rate, okay? Remember that. In other words, use your own eyes and your own common sense, and you don't have to be trained as an epidemiologist in order to be able to see what this kind of data really shows you, okay? That's what I'm saying. Use your own head and use your own persistence, because only by persistence can you get this stuff. Now let's see what happened to adults in Japan, okay? The kids, right? But this is pancreatic cancer, which is an epidemic in this country now. Okay? Look at it. During the time of these dirty power plants producing electricity in Japan, believe me, they used electricity, even in Japan, between 1935 and 45, with coal burning dirty, filthy power plants, and people weren't dying of pancreatic cancer. They had many drugs and chemicals that were being used, and they weren't dying at this rate. It was flat. It wasn't rising. But what you see is the minute, within a year or two, that the first atomic bomb was detonated, there was a rise that increased in rate all through the time of many bomb tests in the Pacific. Now, if you cannot believe this kind of data, well, then nothing in the world can ever persuade you, and that's probably true of our atomic energy commissions all over the world. I mean, they can look at this and say, this is all smoking, right? Cigarette smoking did it, right? Nobody smoked before 1945, huh? Nobody smoked before 1945, right? And all of a sudden, they started smoking, and every time there was an explosion, they smoked more. I mean, that's what this says, right? That's what they would tell you in Vienna. They were just afraid, and therefore they smoked more, and that's why we have more pancreatic cancer. Although nobody has ever related pancreatic cancer to smoking. But, I mean, that doesn't matter. To the people who want to promote atomic energy, nothing matters except promoting atomic energy. And therefore, it takes ground root people, people on the ground, to change the world, okay? Remember that. And you don't have to be an epidemiologist to do it. You can be a lousy engineer. Okay, Connecticut. All right. Now, at the same time that this was happening in Japan, what was happening to us? It was worldwide. It just didn't stay in the Pacific Ocean. This was 5,000-10,000 miles away, right? In Connecticut, pancreatic cancer. We just saw it rise because of smoking, right? Now it's also suddenly rising and smoking in Connecticut, right? Huh? Again, 5, 4, 5, 6 years, the peak comes down again, then another test series, and another test series, and every time there's a peak, people smoke whenever they hear of a new detonation, right? I mean, this is what this shows.
Now, I mean, one has to laugh because otherwise
you'd go crazy. If I could, I have to face this stuff all the time. And believe me, a lot of things have happened in my family that I cannot understand any other way but from the environment. And that shows you the cancer rate between 1935 for females. It wasn't just the men who smoked. It was the women who started all of a sudden, right? Right here, at the time of the atomic bomb, had a very sharp influence on the rate of smoking in Connecticut. Right? But this is really serious stuff because it went from a level of about 225 to a level of 270 and just in 1 year. You know, I mean, how is that? How come cancer can rise so early? What I'm trying to say is this. We are surprised by the rapid onset of cancer death, right? What we have to understand is that the agent that is involved in the environment, such as strontium 89, strontium 90, barium 140, going to the bone, going to the bone marrow, causes a deficient immune system. And in other words, it promotes what already may a beginning of a cancer. In other words, there were many women in the process of developing cancer, and when this stuff arrived, it just triggered the ability of the body to fight it, and it happened more rapidly. That's what we find again and again, that cancer does not take 10, 20 years to develop. It can happen because there are many people already developing a cancer, and if you damage their immune system, and the immune system normally has a function to defeat the cancer cells all over the body, that's why things can happen so much more quickly. Otherwise, we have no explanation for this. But Connecticut is the only state that had such wonderful statistics way back to 1935, and that's why I'm showing you Connecticut. It's the best cancer registry that goes back the longest time in this country.